Meeting to order, 6:30. Declare the meeting open. We begin by acknowledging that we're on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. We respect their elders, past and present. I let people know that the meeting will be recorded for audio, and I ask elected members if they foresee any conflict of interest with any item on the agenda at the outset. Councillor Crossland?
Just a question, and it may affect others as well, but it's just a question to governance. In the annual business plan, there is mention of streetscaping, which is, I live on one of those roads, it's way down. And also there's mention of a reserve which may be removed, and that's quite close to where I live as well. And I just wanted some advice whether that needs to be flagged up or whether it's not a conflict of interest.
Mr. Mifsud.
Through the Chair, Councillor Crossland, that's not a conflict of interest. So Council tonight will be looking at the draft annual business plan and budget, subsequently in June the final one. You're adopting the budget, not the actual works program as such. So it's not a conflict.
Then I'll proceed. Would somebody like to move confirmation of the minutes of the last General Council? Moved Councillor Telfer, seconded Councillor Pfeiffer. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, would someone like to move that we receive the communications reports, the written communications reports? Councillor Hutchinson, seconded Councillor Telfer. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Now, at the second General Council meeting of the month, we can have elected member verbal communications, but there's only been one council meeting this month, so on a technicality, we'll have to move on. Adjourned items, the amendment to the streetscape policy and verge guidelines. Now, I notice that there's a deputation on this topic, so it makes sense to hear the deputation first. If I have leave of the meeting, let's hear from the deputation before we deal with the adjourned item. So if no one objects, you'll see on page 53. Yes, there we are, Mr. Olson. So if you'd like to come forward, please, and there's a space for you at the end of the front bench here. And Mr. Lyons will explain how the microphone works. So you have 5 minutes. If you finish early, then it gives time for elected members to ask any questions. Please let us know your views, etc., on what you'd like done with our streetscape policy.
Good evening, all. As a resident in Glandorf for the past 6 years, I've always taken a lot of pride in ensuring my property represents the best of what the council represents and what I feel to be an aesthetically pleasing property. When building in 2013, I was of course made to comply with strict heritage style guidelines that existed in my area, particularly my street, site coverage requirements and a range of other sensible regulations council has in place to ensure that a property remains aesthetically pleasing. But in recent times, my career requirements, we welcomed a little one into the world, time pressures have meant that maintaining a garden, weeding, planting, watering, fertilising, everything that goes with that has been a little less practical. So when moving into the property, we built on what was a very old subdivision. The footpath was at that time a mishmash of an old driveway that was restored to footpath, a patchwork quilt of concrete that had been obviously repaired numerous times, and an area of dolomite, dead grass, mud, and probably what you'd expect from a less desirable council district. So in theme with our investment in the house, we spent some money to do some work. We dug out the existing grass and dolomite. We laid some loam and laid some lawn at significant cost. Unfortunately, the significant shade from an overhanging jacaranda tree, constant traffic from parents and kids parking there for school pickup at the nearby Black Forest Primary School, has meant that the grass has not been able to survive and is now a collage of weeds, dirt and mud. So I recently installed artificial turf in a small 10 metre square section of my front yard. I've been delighted with the results. Immediate burst of greenery, no hassles, no maintenance. So when applying to install artificial turf on my verge, I was pretty stunned to hear that that was not going to be able to move forward with council approval. Across the road sits an overgrown mix of spindly grass weeds, dirt, dolomite, overhanging weeping trees. I've witnessed many parents and children trip on this area. It's obviously the consequence of a resident not paying attention to their verge. So how I perceive the current state, verges are left what appears to be entirely unattended by council, yet the council's telling me that I can't install a commonly accepted commercial grade, no maintenance product that I'm able to install en masse inside my property, yet not able to install outside on my verge in a small area. I see only two solutions. Either the council addresses an issue of ongoing verge maintenance, or it allows residents to install artificial turf amongst an approval process that would ensure product installation and maintenance meets these necessary requirements. It's been recommended I install a native or low maintenance plants, yet these would simply be trampled by passengers getting in and out of their cars parked against my curb. I've been advised of some of the reasons as to why artificial turf is not allowed by council staff and by speaking to Councillor Masika as to why artificial turf has been banned. I've also heard some of the environmental arguments as to why it's not recommended. I'm no environmental expert. It's not my place to engage in an environmental argument. My role as a GM of a large South Australian enterprise requires me to look at many matters that I'm not an expert and to weigh up all arguments presented. I hear many potential issues, I hear many prospective problems in relation to artificial turf, yet I hear far more positive and constructive reasons to support the installation of artificial turf on verges, and I could provide specific information if required, but I'm sure you all have more resources and are more capable of finding this information than I am. In closing, are we certain that artificial turf, a product already publicly accepted and used in areas en masse, poses a bigger issue than dolomite and other similar services, particularly when laid in such a minor form? Artificial turf already exists on many a footpath, both in the Marion Council, I've seen it, and in other councils, without issue. So to expect that the council will be inundated with applications can be settled by the amount of artificial turf already installed in councils such as Unley. And it's not the product for everyone and for every need, but for where it is suitable and practical, council should simply just allow for it to be installed. Thank you.
Thanks. There's a little bit of time. If anyone has any questions, any of the elected members? Councillor Clancy.
I was just wondering if you're the general manager of an enterprise, the South Australian Enterprises, does that have any link to artificial turf?
None at all. I'm the general manager of Girard Corporation, so no, none at all.
Thank you.
Councillor Gard.
Thank you for a very well encapsulated summary of your position. I want to know whether in your immediate vicinity other people have shown an interest as well, or is there a general opinion about it?
I haven't canvassed support for this in the nearby area. I've spoken to my nearby neighbour, my very directly next door neighbour. He has dolomite outside of his... on his verge out in front of his property, so he's very keen and he's prepared to incur the expense, so we'd do it alongside out the front of both of our houses, but I haven't door knocked, I haven't canvassed support, so I wouldn't be able to comment.
Yeah, thanks, the Chair. Thanks so much for coming to present it tonight, and my question is it will be directed to you and also directed to the Council at a certain stage, that seeing the amendment which has been proposed to change the policy itself, they say, yes, if the owners are going to be responsible to install and take care of the artificial turf, in case of Council come and do maintenance, disturb of the turf, whether rip it off, it will be upon the resident to reinstall it and maintain it. So from your case, do you think the resident will be able to do it and then the council come and rip it off to to maintain the, something on which is on the street and then ask you to build again?
The product can be really easily removed. It just needs to be unpegged and rolled back. So in terms of accessing infrastructure underneath, if it does need to be moved, it can simply be removed and replaced. It doesn't need to be done by an expert. It can be done by myself or whoever. So I don't see if that's part of the requirements to have it installed, the infrequent nature of which it would need to be removed. That would be a rare circumstance, I'd suggest. So I, for sake of practicality, I wouldn't see a problem with it.
Thanks for those questions and answers. So, Mr. Olson, if you'd like to take your seat back in the gallery, we can go to the next item on the agenda, which happens to be the motion concerning this issue. So just remind members, we've had Councillor Hutchinson move, Councillor Pfeiffer second, Councillor Masika has also spoken. But we've had communication from Councillor Hutchinson that he wishes to vary the motion in keeping with the blueprint on the screen. I think it's appropriate to ask leave of the meeting that Councillor Hutchinson be able to speak again briefly, contrary to our normal procedure, given that there was the adjournment, etc. Just purely, not to argue again, just purely to explain the significance of the amendment, and then we'll see if the seconder wishes to persist in seconding the motion. So, Councillor Hutchinson, what's the intent there?
Thank you, Your Worship. The intent of the minor variation is to include a couple of different points or additional points to support the original motion, and that be point 2B, that we meet a minimum quality standard, because it was quite rightly pointed out to me that, you know, we could have people buying a carpet square of product and putting it down themselves.
Yeah, I think it is self-explanatory.
Yep,
yep. And there's and the then, other aspect.
And the other aspect was that that we do encourage residents, where possible, to look at alternatives. And as Mr. Olson did point out, staff are already doing that without prompting. But I think it's just worth reinforcing that, hey, we do have a bias for natural product.
All right. So that makes clear the addition. So does anyone object with Councillor Hutchinson moving that in the amended form? I mean, it's pretty consistent, just a refinement, I would suggest. If not, then Councillor Pfeiffer, are you willing to second?
Thank you, Your Worship. Yes, I am.
Very well. Now, anyone except Councillors Hutchinson, Pfeiffer and Masika may speak to the motion. Councillor Valescu.
Yeah, look, I speak against the motion. At the end of last term, we had, and I will paraphrase another councillor here, we had put a motion to try to ban plastics, and in particular single-use plastics, and here we are now wanting to cover our verges in it. I think there's issues with this type of surface. Not every resident is going to be as diligent, perhaps, as Mr. Olson, through the chair, indicated he would be as far as its maintenance. And if people move, this remains there. There's issues with the permeability, but also our verges are meant to be they're meant to be functional. People have contacted me, and they're saying, haven't we got better things to focus on than putting artificial lawn down? What about actually fixing the footpaths, the tripping hazards? And I agree with the deputation, we need to do more about verge maintenance. But there is a difference with dolomite and artificial turf, and that's the permeability. And I think especially water being able to get through. So maybe that strip of lawn in particular, you know, may have a lot of traffic, so we can't really grow anything there. But we're not changing our whole policy for one small strip of verge. So, members, I think if we're looking at the environmental issues as well, you know, there are a lot of, we don't need to spend a whole lot of resources, creating this stuff. If people want to put it on their private property, that's fine. But we shouldn't be creating it. Because, first of all, it's non-biodegradable, but it does degrade. So there'll be bits of this stuff all over the drains eventually. And I've seen it in other areas. And nothing comes through, and you've just got a whole lot of debris that sits on it. as well. So I think probably something like this maybe should have been canvassed, you know, maybe at a when we looked at the policy in whole. But yeah, but members, I don't support this, and I urge you not to support it either.
Right. So I'm after someone who wishes to speak in favour. Councillor Gard, you put up your hand. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Worship. With all due deference to people speaking against the motion, I really feel that this subject has become a storm in a teacup. One of the great problems with the City of Marion, and it's fairly large in my particular ward, the Coastal Ward, is that we simply don't have the resources to present the city at the microscopic level from house to house, verge to verge, at the level that is deserving for the rates that are paid. Now, we're not talking about oceans of new material in this instance. We're talking about people, probably hundreds, I would expect, not thousands, in our total city that are interested in the betterment of their street and their property. And a point that I made earlier is that when one person becomes interested, another person becomes interested, and so it goes on. And a lot of those people that do become interested, in fact, will plant green stuff. Whether that be a valid point or not is for dispute, perhaps, but I believe that that is human nature. I don't think we have the ability, and probably we don't have the appetite as a council, to really improve amenity to the level that is deserving. And so in that situation, we have to be circumspect about people that just want to make their place look better. They're sometimes old, they sometimes don't have the means, they sometimes don't have the time. But I've seen places around my district in particular that look 10 times better for the treatment that we're talking about, 10 times better. And it's not something that is running over the top of us all. It's just in a spot here and a spot there. I would say in Marino, which is in dire need of this sort of treatment, there would only be at the most 10 cases that I can think of. And I'd say some of those are in the Holdfast Bay area when I think of that. So it's not running over the top of us. So please, let's have some common sense. It's not going to heat the earth any more than what's under it at the moment, or would be under it and sits there at the moment. It's not going to cause great drainage issues, and we can control it to a certain extent with particular specifications if we so desire, or if the train starts to run away.
Other speakers against? Councillor Hull.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will vehemently speak against this. I am indeed the one that cited the oddity that the mover of this motion is the same council that moved the motion to ban single-use plastic in this place. What an oddity.
And point of order, Councillor Hull. I'm just going to caution you, just in a friendly way, that you can go through the arguments without needing to refer to individual other councillors.
I'm just putting
and,
out...
And if you do, I'm just concerned that you may fall into error.
Well, it is an oddity. Have I said something wrong?
You're on the verge of it, yes.
Yeah, well, while you do this, the clock keeps going and you're just winding the clock down.
Well, it's in your hands, Councillor Hull.
No, it's not. That's, the clock should stop when you interject.
Keep it going, Councillor Hull.
It's not fair. I'll keep saying that. It's not fair. Now, Councillor Valesky makes a very good point. When this stuff breaks down, and it will, in our sunlight, guess where it goes? Washes into our curb and water table, down our drains, out into the Patwalunga, and out to sea. What happens then? The marine life ingest it, thinking it's fodder. And it's exactly the same reason why we ban single-use plastic. You know, we don't have our wrappers on our lollies anymore for good reason. Now, the other thing is, it's not recyclable. It's in the report. Our staff have told us it's not recyclable. So why would we be producing this mats of green artificial turf when ultimately it'll end up in landfill. So there's another environmental issue. Now, you know, this council keeps beating its chest about its environmental credentials. How is this consistent with that? Now, if you listen to Talkback Radio, Mr. Mayor, it's resounding no. Resounding no. Absolutely. And all the feedback that I've had from my community is, don't do it, Councillor Hull. Don't vote for it. We don't support it. Now, if you ask me what the solution is, and it will cost, Tonsley are doing a great job of their verges at the moment. We could use that as a model to get rid of the dolomite and whatever else. Now, I live on a main road. It's never really going to get any better for me. It is what it is. The other thing that worries me is, and I'd be interested to know from Mr. Lyons, that from another council area I heard that it actually draws the tree roots, the street tree roots up because the water lingers underneath the artificial turf. And then we actually end up with tree root protuberances coming through our footpaths. So that's another one that I've become aware of late. But it's a no from me, a resounding no from my community.
Any other speakers in favour? Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, I think we need to just take a step back and have a look at the size of the problem here. We're not proposing 200 football fields of fake grass. We're proposing a verge or two or 10. We're not going to destroy the biodiversity of our marine life out in the Gulf by how many verges we're going to make fake grass. We're not talking real grass versus fake grass. We're not talking a nice garden versus fake grass. We're talking dolomite versus fake grass. They're very, very similar in characteristic. Dolomite's not super for the environment anyway, right? Heat-wise, look, I have a heap of trouble with it. Most of these residents will have trouble growing grass under trees. It's shaded. It doesn't have the same heat problem when it's under trees. And if it's not under trees, then the tree root problem goes away and a lot of things go away. It's arguably not single use. You can walk on it over and over again a lot of times. It doesn't wear out. It's pretty handy. It takes a long time to degrade. I think it's an answer to our modern society of people who are just too busy to go out and look into gardens. I guess the big part that worries me about this whole thing is the double standard that we're sort of encouraging now, where someone can develop a property and put 20 square metres of fake grass in the front yard, and then we'll say, no, you can't put 4 square metres on the verge because it's environmentally poor, and you know, we're worried about the fish and we're worried about the tree roots and we're worried about all this stuff. Take a step back and have a look at the size of the problem, guys. It's tiny, and there's probably a half a dozen people who actually want to do this. As long as we have the right measures in order for installation, and as long as we have a means to tell a resident, hey, that's not good enough quality, I don't see any harm in this. I really don't.
Any other speakers against? Councillor Hutchinson to reply and close the debate. Thanks.
Thank you, Your Worship. Members, I think we've heard it all. What we're really talking about here is what's reasonable as a council. And personally, I think my comments are out there that personally I wouldn't use it on my own property. But when I think about it, I go, well, what's reasonable? If my neighbour, for example, had a dolomite verge, and this was a solution that they were looking at, I would be all for it because it's a better outcome than what's currently out there. Members, we've heard about the environmental issues. There's been, I read somewhere as part of my research, it only takes about 3 mows of a 2-stroke lawnmower to emit the same amount of carbon into the atmosphere as fake grass. So I'm a bit perplexed by some of the comments made there, and I'll go into a couple of those. But when we are talking about small numbers of residents that would be looking to take this out, there's no mass rollouts. We're not building soccer pitches with rubber-filled beads within the grass. It's currently unregulated across our city. It's going in daily, and we wouldn't know about it because we're not policing it. So
putting a framework around residents who want to do the right thing, like Mr. Olson here, who's approached council and said, hey, this is what I would like to do. Is there anything I need to know? Can I apply to do this? Putting a framework in place to have those standards that we would like to see administered by the council. Members, there's been some scaremongering around this permeability, which is an absolute fallacy, because the product is permeable, because it needs to be. Then we've heard these tree root issues. It's not Brighton Road, members. The product that's layered down in the middle of Brighton Road and on putt-putt courses is a completely different product from what we're talking about in the residential sector. Members, we've got dolomite in our verges currently, and it is slippery when it's dry. Elderly residents getting out of vehicles, traversing across that product, are prone to slipping. So the fact that dolomite's all well and good is, again, another fallacy. Finally, members, I'm the first one to raise single plastics. True. Single-use plastics. I'm all for changing the future. But what we're talking about here is such a minor use of a building product. That's what it is. And no building product is perfect. And this one is not perfect in all dimensions, but it is better than what we've currently got. So, members, I hope you can see the reasonableness about what we want to achieve here, and that we can show our residents that, hey, in small, reasonable uses, it can be quite acceptable. Thank you.
All those in favour, please raise your hand. All those against, please raise your hand. Well, you can't, Councillor, oh, you can put your hands down. A division can't be called until the Chair has ruled on the outcome. Now, the vote was tied, so it falls to the Chair to cast a vote. And I must admit, it's quite a vexed issue, because it's not the best product environmentally, yet I think Councillor Pryor's right in assessing the size of the problem. So I'm going to cast my vote in the affirmative. Now, division called, no doubt, by Councillor Hull. So we vote again. Those who are in favour, please stand in your place. And I'll name them: Councillor Pfeiffer, Pryor, Hutchinson, Schilling, Duncan and Gard. Those, please sit down. Those against are Councillors Masika, Valescu, Clancy, Hull, Telfer and Crossland. The vote is tied. I cast my vote with the affirmative. So the motion is carried. So that'll be recorded in the minutes. And the policy will be amended accordingly. Thank you, Mr. Olson, for coming along. Now we go on to the next item, page 38, Tonsley Greenway. Already been quite a bit of discussion about this, members. Councillor Telfer and I, in particular, met on site. And sort of assess that. The matter's come before Council before. The Mayor has now twice written to the Minister for Transport, most recently with a more specific, focused letter just on the pedestrian-activated crossing that we think is necessary across the northern end of the Tonsley precinct. So hence the motion that you'll see at the bottom of page 39. Basically, we're saying that's the alignment we think is most suitable, and it is the most direct north-south route for a cyclist. And we will consider it again once we hear from the Minister for Transport. There's only one thing that I'm going to suggest to whoever wants to move it, and that is in Clause 2, after Tonsley Greenway, that we... Sorry, I beg your pardon. I'll get to it in a moment, but if councillors are going to consider the subsequent recommended motion in light of further information, I was going to suggest, where you see clause 2 there at the bottom of page 39, that after Tonsley Greenway at the end of the sentence, that we put subject to community consultation, because it's one thing to endorse an alignment, but I do want to make it clear that that is not a final decision unless we've consulted first. It's quite important that we would do that. Now, procedurally, I need to remind you that this is an adjourned item and that it was moved by Councillor Telfer, seconded by Councillor Pfeiffer. Now, I was going to... I'll take it one by... I know Councillor Pfeiffer's got a question, but I'll just ask Councillor Telfer first if she's willing to withdraw her original motion.
Suggestion that I would be willing to withdraw the prior motion.
Thank you. Now, over to you, Councillor Pfeiffer. Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, that's fine with me. Look, my question, Your Worship, was that has anything actually materially changed since we adjourned this item? Because we, I mean, you've written to the Minister twice and we haven't had a second response yet. I mean, it's to me, it's 6 to 1, half dozen the other as to whether we actually push this through tonight, noting that that is our preferred alignment, or whether we wait for the Minister still.
Well, it's just that if there would no doubt be discussions between council staff and department staff, so it would be helpful probably as a guide to staff if council has said, hey, this is really the best alignment subject to community consultation,
but
we need a pedestrian activated crossing.
Sure.
So that would reinforce the Mayor's letter.
Sure.
So that I think that answers the question. So, Councillor Telfer, are you happy to move the remove? Thank you. And that'll be seconded by Councillor Pfeiffer, but just coming back to you, Councillor Telfer, you happy? Do you need to speak further? So we're just checking that it's on the screen for everyone to see. It's great this new system has smaller writing so that it makes it extremely difficult. I've got a number of elected members who simply can't read that. We're going to have to revisit this whole new system, I think. Note to staff. Normally there's a little icon in these programs with a magnifying glass, but I can't see one up there. Oh, hang on, there we go. Councillor Telfer, did you want to speak further to it? I mean, you can assume that what's on the paper is going to be up on the screen eventually.
I'm unsure, given that it's an adjourned item and I've already spoken, whether that changes things.
If you've withdrawn your motion, mm-hmm. if there's leave of the meeting, right. then you can do so. Mm-hmm. And my reading of the room is that the council gives leave to the mover to move a further motion on the topic and the seconder to also second the motion again.
All right. Very briefly, we are working from Sturt Road and down through the Tonsley village and going across the train line. That's where we're putting all our efforts at the moment. In the future, we will be going further north along road, woodlands, and crossing over, and we keep going north. And so Percy Avenue and West Street is the best that we can find at this point in time. And so I recommend it to you.
Thank you. Councillor Pfeiffer, further to add?
Thank you, Your Worship. Yourself, Your Worship, Councillor Telfer, myself, and I think a few others in here as well are regular cyclists. I'm a commuter cyclist myself. And I mean, look, it might be different as a recreational cyclist, but as a commuter cyclist, you try and take the path of least resistance. You try and take the route that's simplest, that's quickest, that's straightest, that has the least amount of traffic on it. From my experience, could be different for others. Look, this is an important cycling route. It's going to become even more important once we get 800 odd houses in the back blocks of Tonsley there. It's fair to say it's tough to get an alignment through that area. it's not as straight and simple as we had hoped. I know, looking at the maps over the course of the last 12 months or so, we've looked at every possible scenario, every possible option, but at the end of the day, it needs to be something that's simple, straight, and with that path of least resistance, and with the least amount of traffic on it as possible. I can tell you right now, it's not the route that I absolutely desperately want, but I think it's the route that will work. Thank you.
Question, Councillor Hull?
I do. Mr Mayor, it's a great segue after Councillor Pfeiffer pointing out people want to have the most direct route. Question to the Chief Executive. Did anybody follow up with the government in terms of why they ignored Council's pleas and why they actually really reneged on their own rhetoric about the Tonsley upgrade of the electrification, when they placed all the electrical bunkers in the path of the natural pathway for a bikeway? Did we ever get an explanation for that?
Mr. Scholl?
Through Your Worship, no, we didn't.
So was that articulated strongly to the government?
On a number of occasions, that's been given to department staff. Whether that got up to the highest echelons, I wouldn't be able to comment, but certainly the staff would be aware that there's frustration there with the placement of the signal boxes.
Right. And just for the record, the cost of removal now they're in place, is about $1.5 million, is that correct?
I think we had a report that indicated $1 to $2 million, I can't remember exactly. But, we're going back into something that is history, and it's not actually directly relevant to the motion tonight.
Well, we're voting on where the bikeway is going to go tonight, Mr. Mayor, and I'm just reflecting on where it should have gone and where it could have gone.
All right, that's right. We've got a lot of business to get through, but are you now speaking in the debate, or...? Okay. Then if there's no one against the motion, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So, moving to minutes of committees on page 54 and also page 61. Anyone have any questions? We're just moving the motions, Councillor Pfeiffer.
Your Worship, are we able to move those two on block?
Moved on block, yes. And seconded, Councillor Hutchinson. The only thing I would add for councillors is that from the review and selection report, you can see that there's at least one vacancy for the planning committee, if I can call it that, and the whole result of that selection process will come back to council, and you can decide what you want to do with it then. Councillor Hull?
As a consequence of the infrastructure meeting, there was an email that was circulated actually upholding the view that I had, that down at Swara the gas has been venting and being burnt for the last 3 years, generating no electricity, and is a climate change fail by this council and the member councils. Shameful waste of energy, shameful addition to greenhouse emissions by this council, because we cannot simply make the effort to find a contractor to put the generators. The last contractor took the generators away. So, it's an appalling reflection on how that was managed down there.
Thank you. I'll ask Mr. Mifsud to respond. He's a board member on Swara that you mentioned, and Councillor Crossland, if he wishes to add anything.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through the Chair, Councillor Hull, per the email that I sent out to all Council members over the Easter weekend, you'll probably recall that we actually do have a contractor in place. Yes, that new contract has been in place for a period of time. It has been required to actually flare the gas, and they have to do so to comply with the EPA's requirements, as well as SWARA's environmental management plan. I'm happy to go through every detail of that email if you would like me to.
Councillor Crossland, anything to add?
Yeah, just to say Councillor Hall's version of that email is completely false. Is that what the email actually says? And I didn't realise he had misinterpreted it. Is that SWARA changed contractors? The old contractor took their equipment away because they used it. It was their equipment. We had another contractor in place. They have to follow a lot of legislative new requirements, which includes flaring before they can build and generate electricity. And as far as a loss to council, it's my recollection that the new contractor actually paid us quite a decent sum of money for lost electricity generation, which was actually a lot more than the last contractor paid.
Mr. Mayor, point of order.
Order.
I've been accused of making a false statement. I still don't understand what is false about what I said.
Order. You're seeking leave to make a personal explanation, perhaps? Well, then the debate, you have contributed already to the debate, so you don't get to speak further. That's that. Is there anyone else speaking further in relation? Order. You are being disorderly, and you're about to leave the meeting if you persist. All right, if you're leaving it there. Are there any other speakers to the motion confirming the minutes? Normally some latitude is allowed when there are significant topics raised by the minutes, so I don't have any problem with that. There being no other speakers, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Now we go to page 57. Normally with petitions, it is just a matter of noting the petition and letting the head petitioner know, but I note that there's some political contribution from the managers, but I'll leave it. It's very much up to councillors how we respond to the petition. So, Councillor Crossland.
Just a question, first of all. I note the petition doesn't meet our guidelines, so my view of it is it's not a relevant petition. It has no addresses contained on it.
Mr. Mifsud, what do you say about the technicalities of the petition? I do note, as Councillor Crossland says, that addresses and suburbs have been blanked out, but has that been done by staff, or is that how the petition was received?
Through you, Your Worship, I would need to verify that. I believe that's the way we've received it, but I'm certainly very happy to follow that through for members and confirm that.
Mr. Mayor, well, point of order.
Order. Just a sec, Councillor Hull, come back to you. Can any other managers, Ms. Byrne, might be able to assist?
Clearly been redacted.
Normally, if there is a petition that doesn't meet the guidelines, that is pointed out in the report. So, Ms. Byrne?
Yes, through the Chair. Petition didn't meet the guidelines as outlined. It was just the email addresses. Generally, petitions need to include the actual physical address of the suburbs. I was advised by governance that I should still actually blank out the email addresses because that is people's public details or personal details, and so you don't want that type of thing to be public.
Well, that's a very interesting question, but the whole point about signing a petition is that people publicly disclose their position, I would have thought. So just to be clear, it's staff who have deleted the email address and suburb?
Correct. I do have a original copy, yes, and that is on file in the system.
Well, from a governance point of view, I don't think that's satisfactory, but Mr. Mifsud, what do we do when we have a petition before the council that doesn't meet the requirements?
Yeah, through you, Your Worship.
I note that in the report itself it says this covering report satisfies the legislative requirements of the City of Marion's Code of Practice Procedures at meetings, whereby any petition received is to be placed on the agenda. and then it actually explains, this is the bottom of page 67. According to the policy, petition must include the name and address of each person who signed or endorsed the petition. Although the petition does not contain this information, the intent of the petition is still understood. But the point of the policy is that we then know whether we have 100 people who live in the city of Marion or 100 people emailing from Sydney and Melbourne. So it's actually pretty significant, I would have thought, to the city of Marion as to what those addresses are. And not just email addresses, but street addresses. That's what the petition policy asks for. So that might change the motion. Mr. Mifsud, further comment?
Through you, Your Worship, I think that what council and what members can do is note the fact that the petition's been received, and we could subsequently forward the additional details through to members if you so wish.
Right. Well, a point of order. I'll take that, Councillor Hull.
In the petition, it was redacted by staff.
Thank you for the point of order. I'll just clarify. Was it the street address, the suburb, which the policy asks for, or was it an email address, Ms. Byrne?
Through the chair, it was every petitioner. It was only email address provided.
All right. Now, thank you, Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, for the sake of just advancing the meeting, I'm prepared to note the petition and notify the head petitioner that it didn't meet the City of Marion's petition guidelines. And I don't think we need to say any more than that.
Very well. So that was sort of the one and four with a variation on that four. Did you wish to speak further while that's being written up?
No, thank you. This has already been to one meeting, and I think at the last meeting we determined what we wanted to do. It's clearly not a council matter.
Is that seconded? Councillor Masika, thank you. Did you wish to speak to that?
No, the Chair. I would like to second it the way it has been put forward by Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. Anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor, these people have really attempted to find some middle ground after the last time the council rejected it. And, you know, we hear from Councillor Crossan it's not a council matter, but many councils around Adelaide have been voting quite considerably in considerable numbers to support it. So I'm not sure whether, you know, that's out of step with the LGA. The LGA, in fact, and the ALGA have supported it. So, you know, Councillor Crossan might be out of step with local government on this. Mr. Mayor, I would be moving the recommendation as put in the report. The timing of this is really critical because the federal election's on the eve. We're on the eve of the federal election. And they're looking for us to actually provide some stimulus to the debate about this within the federal government. This costs us nothing.
Councillor Hull.
It costs us nothing.
I'll just draw, as a matter of relevance, just draw your attention to the motion. Now, at a previous meeting, you moved a motion which wasn't seconded, and that dealt with the substantive issues, so you addressed those at that meeting. This motion is simply noting, I presume you're not against that, and it's to advise the head petitioners that it didn't meet the requirements. So you're speaking against that.
Yeah, that's not good enough, so that's why I'm speaking against it. Now, the other thing is, before the election, the Anti-Poverty Network surveyed candidates running for this council. Four of them indicated that they would support lobbying for a rise to Newstart. I could name those councillors. They got elected, presumably on the basis that they indicated that they would support the poorest people of our community to get a better deal out of the federal government. And unfortunately, those four successful candidates have reneged on that deal. And I find that very disturbing, and so do the members of the community that had high hopes of them to represent them properly and to actually honour their commitment, pre-election commitment. And this is once again an opportunity tonight for them to finally honour their commitment that they gave to the Anti-Poverty Network before the election, because the wording of my last motion had no financial commitment to it. There was no good reason why you would actually speak against it, let alone not vote for it. So, I can tell you now,
again,
that those councillors lost a lot of credibility in that
Councillor
process.
Point of order. You're on the verge of reflecting on the motivations of other councillors again, and I urge you to be careful about not doing that, please.
It's public record, Mr. Mayor. So that's my lot on that. I think it's quite concerning that we, Marion Council, just about every council surrounding us actually has voted. West Torrens, Onkapringa have actually voted to support this, but Marion Council, with the demographics we have, are letting down the people that we should be actually advocating for and waving the flag for. It's something that I believe in. Sections of my ward do have people that
Councillor Hull, can I bring you back to the motion once again, which is essentially whether this petition meets our petition policy or not?
Can I ask a question at this point? Did any of the staff
As long as you're still within your 3 minutes, you can.
Did any of the staff think to contact the petitioners and actually point this out, give them some guidance?
Well, that is a relevant question. Can we hear from Ms. Byrne?
Through the chair, no, we didn't. However, we received this rather late, and the timeframes to actually include it in this tonight's agenda. No, we didn't have time to get back to this.
All right. Any closing remarks, Councillor Hull?
Mr. Mayor,
we've given you unlimited time, by the way, to make up for all the other times that you fell short.
Right. So a follow-up question is: Will the petitioners be given the appropriate guidance in forming the petition? Now, by the time it gets to me, it's been redacted, and I wouldn't know what's in the petition. So I didn't have heads up there was a problem with it. Otherwise, I could have contacted them and given them a warning that, well, this is not going to work particularly well for you. That's the question I have. Are these people going to be given a fair go in terms of, and guidance in terms of our policy?
Well, I'll leave that for you to take up that issue, Councillor Hull, with the petitioners. You can do that.
Right.
And you've put staff on notice as to future petitions, that it certainly is helpful if petitioners can be guided as to the correct format when an incorrect petition is lodged. Right. So that's a fair point.
Well, one last question. Would you be happy to entertain a deputation from these people?
I can foreshadow the answer would be no, because we've dealt with the issue. You've put forward your own motion on this topic and it wasn't seconded. So it's time for you to face reality take notice of the intent of the council chamber.
To be fair, these people have not sought a deputation. They would like to actually talk to the council, try and get a favourable ear,
You have done that for them, and you know the results on the public. I'm not going to continue this any further.
So you're going to refuse
order?
Deputation.
No, don't speak over me, Councillor Hull. That is where you're getting very, very close to the edge, Councillor Hull. Do you want to be thrown out for speaking over the mayor? I'll move on. It's been moved. Has it been seconded? Yes, it has. Anyone else speaking in favour of the motion? Councillor Telfer. Right. You may speak to the...
I support clauses 2 and 3 because they are in the level playing field of where our community is and where the ideas of our community come forward. There is widespread concern about New Start throughout our city and throughout the whole of South Australia. And in doing that, I am very conscious that these words, clauses 2 and 3, are not politically divisive. They just reinforce that already the LGA on our behalf as such has written a letter to the Honourable Paul Fletcher, and this motion suggests that a similar letter is sent to the same relevant minister. We're not sure it's going to be the Honourable Paul Fletcher. And over and above that, we are emphasising the things that we already proudly do for our community in this whole area of mitigating against poverty. So our neighbourhood centres offer programs, we offer informal education and pathways to jobs, and we offer through our volunteer positions what we can do. Now that may not be enough, but this is not a politically divisive statement in making those two statements, and so that's why I make this amendment.
Is the amendment seconded? Councillor Gard, wish to speak?
Your Worship, I'm passionately in favour of the cause. Let me say that right up front. Could go on for years probably to explain why. But the main point that concerns me about where we were going is that there is the potential for divisiveness or divide and rule situations where one municipality may disagree with another. But I think it's very savoury that we have an LGA represent the sector in this way. It's a democratic process. It takes a fair bit of the politics out of it. It's a great representation of a sector that is very much in touch with the very people that we're trying to speak for and protect. So I do happily second and commend the amendment.
Thank you. In accordance with meeting procedure, we now vote on the amendment. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. The amendment is carried, so we now have clauses 1, 2, 3 and 4. Those who haven't yet spoken might speak either for or against. Councillor Bilescu.
I do want to speak in favour of the amended motion. I think the first thing is let's step back and put ourselves in the shoes of the job seekers. A lot of people probably haven't had the background and advantages that many of us take for granted. Not saying that people in the chamber haven't had struggle, but you sort of see this technicality has nullified what they're trying to say. This technicality has stopped them. And this is a sort of thing that probably happens quite frequently for people that aren't entrenched in employment, don't have the same background or opportunities, or may have some barriers to understanding. So these are quite often the most vulnerable people in our community. And I don't want to get caught up in the politics of it just before an election. And that's, I would have probably been a little bit more political after the election, because you can still send a message without it seeming like you're campaigning for one side or the other. But I think it's really important what we provide. What do we provide through our services? What can we do? What can we do to make things better? And we run lots of programs that do benefit. I know the ACE program is something that we run through our community centres, adult community education. That's a great benefit. Not only does it provide people with an opportunity to learn something, but it gives them a place to be and a feeling of belonging. And I think that's important. When you don't have money, you're leaving the house, you've got to think about what the costs will be. And we're providing venues for people that don't have much money. I think I was a New Start 25 years ago. And, it wasn't very much then. It hasn't gone up, in real terms. So, I'm touch wood, I'm lucky. It's not something that I have to rely on. And look, whilst personally I think that the rate is low, I think that our position should be through our sphere of influence and not beyond that. So I urge people to support the amended motion.
Anyone speaking against the motion as amended? No, then I'll ask Councillor Crossland as the original mover to respond and close the debate. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. Some lovely stories there, nothing to do with the petition. But basically, look, I've had a look on the website. There's forms to fill in that say name, address, sign. It's quite easy to follow. Basically, my motion was to acknowledge the petition, even though it wasn't actually filled in correctly, and just note it. But at the end of the day, you can put all these nice, lovely words, but it says the same thing. As far as Councillor Hull is concerned, yeah, it's great not to be a sheep. We don't follow the councils just because they've put a motion forward. That's what Marion's about, and we're not always in step with the LGA. That's what Marion Council's about as well, and I'm quite grateful to members that aren't sheeps in this room. So you can vote for it as you wish.
All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. Motion is carried. A division is called by Councillor Hull. So those in favour of the amended motion, motion as amended, please stand. Those in favour, Councillors Pfeiffer, Valescu, Clancy, Hull, Telfer, Hutchinson, Duncan and Gard. You may sit down. Those against are Councillors Masika, Pryor, Schilling and Crossland. Motion is carried. And look, now that that's carried, I hope, just if we just pause, just hit the pause button for a sec to reflect on what we're doing. We have another 300 pages in the agenda. We have, in my estimation, at our normal pace, about 3.5 hours of discussion on some very complex issues before we even get to the elected members' motions. It's a very packed agenda. And the reason I've consistently, the last 4.5 years, discouraged elected members from visiting issues which properly belong in the federal or state parliaments is because it turns us into an irrelevant debating society. We can debate this issue for hours. I mean, I've got strong personal views myself about what should happen here, but you know what? They're not relevant. And I say, an irrelevant debating society.
Point
because
of order, Mr. Mayor.
Order.
Honestly,
this is about the
point
conduct.
Of order.
A point of order. I'll hear the point of order.
We have a big agenda tonight. This motion went against what you obviously wanted. Bad luck.
Order, and that is reflecting on the Mayor. That won't be tolerated either. So I'll ask you to apologise for that.
Have a big agenda. We don't want to hear the rhetoric of what you think should be right in the world.
Well, actually,
we just want to deal with council business.
Order. Right.
Please.
I'm saying that you are being disorderly. Regulation 29, interruption of meetings by members. A member of a council must not, while at a meeting, behave in an improper or disorderly manner or cause an interruption or interrupt another member who is speaking. And my goodness, that includes the Mayor. Accordingly, since I charge you with that contravention, you may give a personal explanation before Council resolves what to do. You have 3 minutes.
I simply moved a point of order, and you allowed me to issue that point of order. You didn't like the point of order, so you decide that you'll actually throw me out. So I was using appropriate meeting procedures.
Even
I wasn't talking
order.
Have I still got 3 minutes?
Order? No, there's a point of order. Even in speaking to defend your position, you cannot reflect, especially falsely, on the motivations of the Mayor. It's not permissible. You must be accountable for your own actions and don't impute any motives to the Mayor or any other elected member. Please continue.
Mr. Mayor, I simply moved a point of order because your view on what we should and shouldn't be dealing with is not really relevant. We've made a decision. We've made decisions about lots of things. We made a decision about flying the rainbow flag. We've made a decision about mining for oil and gas off in the Gulf. Obviously, you didn't like that either. But the reality is that we're...
Order. I'm going to call your personal explanation to a close since you have refused to comply with my ruling that you cannot reflect on the motives of other members, including the Mayor. I ask you now to leave the meeting while we deliberate on what should happen next. So I'll ask any member who considers there's any substance in what I've put to bring a procedural motion. Those Options could be that no action be taken, to censure the member, or to suspend the member for a part or remainder of the meeting. So, in my view, to keep order in this place, and bearing in mind some past behaviour, a motion to exclude from the remainder of the meeting might be an appropriate response. Councillor Hutchinson?
I'll move that way.
Do you wish to speak to it? Is that seconded? Councillor Crossland? Do you wish to speak to it?
No, I think we've all witnessed it. Thank you, Your Worship.
Anyone speaking against the motion? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried. All those against, that's carried by majority. Thank you. So Councillor Hull is suspended for the remainder of the meeting. And I do stress that it was not called as a point of order by myself because I didn't like the point of order or that I disagreed with the content of the motion. What is not permissible is to attribute motives for decisions to other members, including the Mayor, and secondly, it is not permissible to talk over the Mayor when he's responding to a point of order. Otherwise, we really will be here for a lot longer than necessary. Thanks, members, for your support on that. And really, the heated feeling that arises from a situation like that just underscores my point. I'm not here to tell elected members how to vote, but I am here to suggest that if we conduct in business, which I know is not actually going to make much difference to people at the end of the Federal Parliament tunnel, we can spend hours distracted from all these other things on the agenda, facilities, trees in the streets, proper drainage, verge policy even, climate change measures and so on, things that we do in our neighbourhood centres. All of these things that matter, that we can control and take responsibility for, I've always encouraged us to focus on those things primarily. But it is indeed up to the Chamber, as we've seen. Let's move on, page 75. Now, we have a confidential matter to deal with. There are some financial affairs in relation to someone else's operations that are involved, and if this covering motion is passed, then I'll have to ask members of the public to leave the room. So, do I have a motion of confidentiality? Councillor Schilling, seconded to Councillor Duncan. All those in favour? That's all those against? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So, we turn to the confidential part of the report.
Just minor things, like I think, you know, point 25 in the business plan, which is on page 93, expand the streetscape program to include arterial roads. Well, I don't think we've kind of resolved that matter yet, really, but I'm fine with it. And then number 27, implement the coastal climate change adaptation plan. Look, I think, and I hope that we'll be doing more on climate change as well, in addition to just implementing the adaptation plan.
For the Moffatville Park Sports and Community Club, I thought that it wasn't to AFL standard.
I think in the end, we didn't we say that we would get them up to AFL standard?
I thought we were only doing AFL standard if we were closing the whole entire road.
Is it the oval or the grounds?
It's the club.
And it was,
it's the club change rooms that are AFL standard. The oval?
Not the oval.
Expansion of the oval to AFL standard.
Oh, no, I don't think we were doing that. It was meant to be the club rooms. Sorry, which page is that, Councillor?
101.
Moffatville. Expansion of the oval. Can we delete the words to AFL standard? Unless staff can advise otherwise, but I I know we had the discussion about the change rooms, but the oval is still going to be in irregular shape.
It's a regular shape. It's just a bit short, 5 metres either side.
Yes. We've improved the shape, but... So just leaving it as expansion of the oval is the safe option. Well picked up, Councillor Clancy. Anything else?
Just on page 122, admitted that one of the projects for administration building essential works is, I didn't know that that had come through this council, or is that from previous councils?
Yes, it's something that we put in every year, oddly enough, but it's a good thing that Mr. Mifsud's here in his governance role, because he can also speak to us in his finance role. When we had a briefing last week on the council's finances, it was pointed out that renewal should be coming out of existing budgets, essentially the reserves built up by depreciation, rather than a loan. So, Mr. Mifsud, why is this cast in terms of a loan?
Through you, Your Worship. So going back quite some time ago, we've discussed with Council about the fact that there are some significant works required in this for this particular facility. At this point in time, we don't actually have an asset management plan for our community facilities. We do for most of our other asset categories. So we actually need a formalised asset management plan that's going to provide us with all the condition audits and ratings for all of our facilities, so that we can more accurately ensure that we have appropriate funding set aside in the asset renewals.
Okay, but now I suggest that's not quite the question, because let's say that somebody somewhere, and this is, goes back not even before this council, before the previous council, it was estimated originally that there would be $6 million worth of improvements required to this building. But when they built the depot and moved in some indoor workers there, it was considered that the $3 million in round figures would be adequate. Is that right, Mr. Mifsud? Something like that?
Yeah, through you, Your Worship. So the $6 million that was previously set aside was over and above renewal. That was to also increase the capacity for staffing. So when the new city services depot was constructed, that enabled in the order of about 30-35 staff to move from this facility down to the road, and that's why the $3 million was transferred to the cost of that project, leaving just under $3 million here to do significant enhancements to things, for example, like the air conditioning, which we all know needs significant attention.
So is that renewal or upgrade? Mr. Mifsud.
Through the Chair, it's going to be predominantly upgrade. The air conditioning systems here are quite outdated in terms of what's required. A component of it, technically, would be renewal, but the majority of it would be upgrade.
All right. Well, I don't know if you want to take it any further, but... Councillor Crossland. Oh, hang on. I'll go around the table as I was going to do. Unless it's on that precise point. No. Okay. Councillor Clancy. Councillor Pryor.
I had a couple of small things, but probably not enough to stop the draft, I think. So they're around, mainly around the renewable plan and things like that, but we don't quite understand yet. So.
Do you want to...
No, I think they can go out and draft. And
we'll all right.
We'll deal with it later.
There's nothing specifically in the text that gives you concern?
No, not really, no.
All right.
Just the general, the whole thing about our renewable plan at the moment.
Okay. Councillor Telfer.
In the motion number 2, I would be keen to have some extra words at the end of number 2 and other projects ratified in this agenda. If there are, if we get to it tonight. And over and above that, they're fairly self-evident, but in the dot points in the four-year business plan, which were We've got now number 10 is, whoops, now I'm hunting myself on the wrong one. Must be in the business plan now. In the business plan. Sorry, I had worked through the dot points. It's not in that one. Sorry. Number 11, continue to plan and develop a tennis facility in Seacombe Heights. I guess that's sufficient, or we could put a couple more words about an allied facilities or something, because we're going to spend $1 million or so on a club room there. But we can leave it. But
clearly, it's put in extremely general terms.
Yeah. And much the same sort of gist. Number 23, say provide a new indoor court facility, and that's a standalone one. I'm just wondering whether we should put / IES, because we don't quite know how all the indoor facility stuff's going to play out by the end of the year.
I'm at a bit of a loss myself, given that things are up in the air.
Too many unknowns.
Yes, but it's always, at any point in time, that's going to be the case.
Okay, all right, we'll go to the cleaners.
Councillor Hutchinson, Councillor Schilling.
I've just got a couple of questions regarding budget. I've emailed Mr. Mifsud over the weekend. Just note that the projected budget for 1920 predicts a $8.06 million operating surplus, and then if you go to page 123, it discusses 122. It says that our target for an operating surplus is 0 to 5%, but we're predicting an 8.6% budget surplus. So is the way we can is there a way that we can reduce that to meet our target?
Through the chair, Councillor Schilling. It really depends on what members want to spend on the community's assets in terms of renewal. Obviously, there's a significant amount of funding in the draft budget for renewal and new infrastructure. The only way that can be funded easily is through our rate rises, which are already very, very low in comparison to most councils. The answer to that in a nutshell is very much that amount of operating surplus is required to enable us to have sufficient funding to fund not just the operating costs for the organisation and the community, but also the capital renewal for all our existing assets.
Okay. Another question is, what effect in the budget would it have and the long-term financial plan if we dropped our rates to CPI of 1.6 rather than 1.8?
Through the chair, just bear with me for a second, Councillor Schilling. It is in the report. I'll just grab that. Just hang on 2 seconds, please.
Just while we're looking at that, perhaps I can throw in the one that I've got. It is on page 112, so turning on a completely different tack. But I'm suggesting you'll notice that the KPI about employee retention has come out. For years I struggled against the notion that the more people we retained, the better off we were, only from the point of view that there are some people that you don't necessarily want to retain. And to try and stop turnover, even if people want to leave, is not productive. However, the end result has been, after a lot of discussions in the review and selection committee, that we've just taken that out altogether. I just wanted to highlight that. But the one that I wanted to put in there is a key performance indicator, page 112, community engagement, core target, project-specific communications to the public shall be timely and 100% accurate. So what I'm getting at there is that when we say we're going to consult with people about a playground or invite them to an event, that it's timely, that we give people, you know, more than a week to respond, depending on what the event is, and also 100% accurate. as we have had some errors go out in communications to the public, and clearly that reflects on elected members. So I don't think it's too much to ask, and I offer it up for your inclusion, if you wish. What do people think? Yes? Councillor Masika, I'm always happy to listen to your wise words. What if we leave 100% out of the core target column and put it in the stretch target column as 100%? Actually, just 100%. That says it all. Any other comment on that? All right, so that might be one we could throw in. Now, Mr. Mifsud, you would like to get back to Councillor Schilling's question.
Thank you, through the Chair. Councillor Schilling, at the elected member forum on the 19th of March, there was a table included under rate modelling that covered off exactly on your question. So if Council was to choose to drop down to CPI in year one of the budget, which is, the long-term plan, 2019-20, the impact in 2019-20 would be just under $150,000. The impact over the 10 years of the long-term financial plan would be just under $1.7 million. However, if we were to consider dropping down to CPI for the whole 10 years, obviously in year one it would be exactly the same, just under $150,000, but the impact over the 10 years of the long-term plan would be just a little bit over $9.5 million.
Councillor Schilling.
Thanks, Mr. Mifsud. That answers my questions for now. Thank you.
Councillor Duncan. Councillor Gard.
Mentioning the 15% population increase on page 80, it's not specific that the 15% relates to the City of Marion or the general metropolis of Adelaide or what. I think we perhaps should be more specific with that.
So that's just the point in the council report?
That's in the report on page 80, that one.
I don't know if staff can help me. Is that repeated in the actual plan itself somewhere? Mr. Skull, do you know?
Through the Chair, I don't know about whether it's repeated, but I can say that we've grown at an average of 1% for a long, long time, and that 15% does relate to Marion, 15% being 1% a year times 15 years. I'm not sure if it's repeated on the plan. Page 104.
Yeah. I'd certainly feel more comfortable if we were explicit about a figure as pronounced as that. It's very significant in the overall planning scheme of things.
The Councillor Gard, on page 104, heading population growth, the City of Marion population is forecast to grow by 15% over the next 15 years. So that meets your concern, I think?
Yes, but if it's mentioned on page 80 as well, isn't
well, that's the council report to us. That is not what is going out for consultation.
Yeah, but I still argue that it's on the record then as an assumption, so I feel just for completeness sake.
We're not here to amend the council report to us. If you wanted to note it in the motion, you could, but I don't really see the point, to be honest.
Oh, I won't go to that length, but perhaps it could be looked at in future instances.
Yes, we're always striving for greater clarity in the council reports, and it has to be said they've improved enormously the last 4 years.
Yes. I might have to apologise. I sent an email to you, Your Worship, and to the CEO. I'm not sure whether it transmitted. It might have sat in my outbox, but it was regarding the fact in the Mayor's Welcome, which is page 87, A point is made that one can expect one's rates to increase if one's house value goes up, but that's not entirely correct. It's only really if it goes up more than the average, and even that's not entirely correct. But it's a point that could be addressed so that the word may, rates may rise if your house goes up a lot.
Councillor Gard, let's have the word may in that place, as you suggest. But I will read out the email that I sent to you in reply to your email. Dear Tim, you are undoubtedly correct. Space constraints regularly compel the Mayor to explain rate issues in shorthand. Yeah. The reason for this inclusion is to respond to a number of complaints I received during the council election campaign along the lines of, you say 1.8%, but my rates have risen much more than that. So that gives you an insight into the Mayor's mind.
It's a very debated point, but thank you for your reply, Your Worship.
Did you have anything else?
I did. I wondered whether somewhere in the overall plan we could mention the continuation of treescaping. It's a very big item in our budget, and we're talking about streetscaping. But we do have a target. I believe it was 5 years ago, 5 years from about 1 year ago, that we were aiming for a 24% canopy, as opposed to the current year ago 16% canopy. And I did feel that that was worthy of mention as a significant item.
It is a heroic gesture, which we are in fact carrying out. I agree it should be highlighted. Mr. Lyons, do you know if it's in there somewhere? It's just so hard to comprehend this vast document so quickly when there's a point like that, but is it in there?
No, it's not in there, because the treescaping is now a program that's in place and it's considered business as usual, where we've tried to capture changes and improvements in the business plan.
Right, so on page 108, it should be there under ongoing services, I would suggest. So perhaps we could add it. I mean, it is, it really is an achievement.
Yeah.
And look, there's a blank space left for it.
Perfect.
In that table.
Perfect.
Yep.
And I did have one other point, Your Worship.
So maybe increased levels of tree planting annually. Would that be fair?
Yep.
Because it's only a summary, but increased levels of tree planting annually. Thanks, Councillor Gard. Good point.
My last point is my old chestnut, the intergenerational equity. On page 123, there's mention of the financial liabilities ratio reaching 7% in 2021 against a target of up to 50%. And I've caught myself unawares here, because I'm not sure of what wording I'm recommending, except to say that I felt some qualification of that comparatively low ratio was worthy in relation to intergenerational equity and the fact that we have more capacity to borrow than we're currently using.
Well, I suppose when I look at that, Councillor Gard, on page 122, financial ratios, I've got myself into trouble before by calling people by their wrong names, but it's getting a long day. I've been working for over 12 hours.
I'll definitely forgive you, Your Worship.
Net financial liabilities, when people look at the figures, they can see that it's low, at least in comparison to the target. How much do you want to spell it out is the question, I suppose.
It's one of those questions, I guess, that if you don't raise it, people probably won't notice it, but if you do raise it, it does give more information about our the fact that we are running conservative. We are deploying quite a bit of cash to our projects, but by the same token, it implies that we have a lot of firepower yet, and so whether we could embellish that paragraph in that
Are you thinking of something like they're adding something like there is scope for further prudent borrowing?
Yeah.
For capital projects?
Yeah, yeah.
For major projects?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, are other people happy with something like that? Seems inoffensive to me. So after that paragraph, where it finishes improving this in future, we could add there is scope for further prudent borrowing to finance major projects. Trying to keep everyone happy. And you made some very good points, Councillor Gard. Thank you. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship. I've could just get a couple as well. Page 119, 9.6. I'm just after some clarification. It shows that we've got forecast 11.3 capital gains, capital grants contributions. 10 million we're hoping for Mitchell Park Sports and Community Club. And it says 1.3 for Sam Willoughby International BMX track, which probably should say UCI track again, which has gone to international. But I thought we had 3.65 in government grants and 0.75 contribution from Onkaparinga Council, which should have probably been mentioned there. I'm trying to work out where 1.3 comes from.
That was one part of the state government funding. But it was 1.3 plus 1 plus the 750,000.
But shouldn't it all be in there?
Yes. No? Oh, Mr. Mifsud, please clarify.
Through the Chair, Councillor Crossland, what that's specifically referring to is the budget year itself, 2019-20. And in 2019-20, we're forecasting that we will receive an additional $1.3 million for that project. All the other grant funding has already been accounted for and committed in previous financial years.
Well, I think that should be explicit because I would say it's misleading.
Confusing.
As it is. And also, I'd add to that, for Mitchell Park, it would be dubious but reasonable to put $5 million instead of $10 million, but we know we're not going to get $10 million. So that has to change, really.
And then later on, Your Worship, in 121, it then mentions, is it 121 or 122, I believe it is, there's another mention of Mitchell Park with right. $20 million next to it.
So, Councillor Crossland, can we just stick with 9.6 for a moment?
Yeah.
We need to clarify this somehow.
And change that international word back to UCI. It's called UCI later on.
International becomes UCI. There was a council resolution about the name of the track. Does anyone recall? Mr. Lyons or otherwise? Mr. Salmon?
As in the Sam Willoughby UCI track?
Yeah.
I think we agreed to that.
Was that the name?
Yes.
I remember the Sam Willoughby part. It's just the UCI bit. But international is somewhat misleading. So UCI would be preferred. That's what we're saying. So, sorry, Mr. Mifsud's just asking me about where was the other point over the page on 120? Mitchell Park Sports and Community Club should be $15 million at this point. Yeah. So, in the brackets, Councillor Crossland, that's what you're referring to?
Yeah, that's right. It just looks a bit confusing that we've got the $10 million up there and then $20 million here.
Well, there'll be a $10 million loan account somewhere. There'll be the $5 million referred to under capital grants, so then the $15 million would make sense. But I still need to come back to 9.6 to clarify these figures. So for Sam Willoughby, that's the amount now. Does it need, Mr. Mifsud, I'm after your guidance here, but do we need an extra sentence to say for the BMX track, this is an addition to approximately $1.75 million forecast to be received in some other period?
Your Worship, yes, we can certainly do that to add that greater clarification for both of those projects, the UCI BMX track as well as the proposed project for Mitchell Park Sports.
Great. So the 11.3 becomes 8.3, I think. And then there'll be an extra sentence. So I beg your pardon, 6.3. I'm fading. But there'll be an extra sentence about in addition the BMX track funding is in addition to the 1 and the 0.75, which is expected to be received in such and such a year. I think that tells more of the whole story. Councillor Crossan, are you happy with that approach?
I'm happy with that, Your Worship.
Thank you. Anything else from you, Councillor Crossland?
Just one more. Page 123, there's the Open Space and Recreation Works Programme, 1920.
Yes.
You'll see halfway down you've got reserve improvements. I'd just like some clarification because on there we've got Cormorant Drive Reserve. My recollection is that that reserve was listed as a reserve we'd be deciding on to remove, and now I see it on to be construction. I have no idea how it's flipped from one to the other, and maybe it's on in error. Because you can't have a removal, surely, under reserve improvement.
Well, with some of our playgrounds, it might be an improvement to take it out. But I don't think that's what's intended. Is there any staff member present who could help with that? To take it on notice, well, that means we're not putting this out for consultation. Mr. Mifsud, helpful suggestion?
Through you, Your Worship, hopefully it'll be a helpful suggestion. What I can do is I can confirm that for members. If it has been excluded, then obviously it'll be removed from this document before we go out to consultation, which will be tomorrow, and that'll therefore rectify that situation for you.
So do we need to... we've already got a motion that says subject to any changes proposed at this meeting. So that is a pending change, subject to checking with the open space team. Yeah. Councillor Crossan, are you happy with that?
I'm happy with that, yes, Your Worship.
Thank you. So just going back to Councillor Telfer's earlier point, she referred us to clause two, subject to any changes proposed at this meeting. Councillor, I didn't quite understand your point, perhaps, because we've got subject to changes at this meeting repeated in clauses 2 and 3. So in terms of other things that we've approved tonight, is there anything more that needs to be said?
Of course, I've got the Marion Museum in mind. It's $25,000 that's been suggested for the budget.
Well, if it is resolved at this meeting, then it'll go in.
Mm-hmm. That's fine, as long as the wording's there to allow to consultation tomorrow.
I think that's the way the wording was designed, so that this can be mutable, and if something else drops in tomorrow morning, then it can be done. So Mr. Mifsud's confirming that's the approach. So I think that takes care of that point. Folks, I resume standing orders, and I think with those changes we've made, I beg your pardon, Councillor Clancy. Do you have your... microphone on.
So just on the welcome page, it says...
And page number, please, would be helpful. Sorry to be a
100.
Pain. Thank you.
Ongoing savings that could be passed on to ratepayers. The strong efficiency focus has enabled us to maintain average rate increase. It says something about passing on savings. Oh, yeah, the ongoing savings that could be passed on to ratepayers. So I think that could be misleading for ratepayers because they'd expect to have a 0% or a less than CPI increase when we're saying we're going to pass on those savings to you. I think they'd expect that in a monetary way rather than a cheaper entry to the
That's right. We were thinking of passing on the savings by putting a tree out the front of their house, but they might be expecting a cheque. Yeah, why don't we just say ongoing savings and delete the rest of the sentence? Happy with that, Councillor Clancy?
Yes.
Thank you. Better to under promise and over deliver. Thank you. All right, would somebody like to move the motion as printed, which obviously incorporates all of that discussion? Councillor Telfer, thank you. Anything further to add? Councillor Gard, seconded. Nothing further to add? All those in favour? All those against? Carried unanimously. Thank you.